Today's program is proudly brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Visit wholefoodsmarket.com or download the Whole Foods Market app to learn more and find the store nearest to you.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
You're listening to Feast Meets West, the show tracing the stories behind your favorite Asian dishes. I'm your host, Linda Liu. We are broadcasting live from Heritage Radio Network at Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Every episode, we dig deep on a dish or an aspect of Asian cuisine, and we interview experts on the topic. We have quite a special episode for you today, where we are not just talking about Chinese food, but the elevated dining experience you can find at a number of Chinese restaurants in recent years here in the city. Specifically ones that immerse you into the romantic and stylish scenes of Shanghai in their early 1930s, or a modern yet cozy setting of a Berlin-influenced Chinese study. While the stereotypical hustle and bustle, the cacophonous sounds, and efficient pushiness of Chinatown restaurants are charming, and they have their spot in the culinary landscape, I'd like to introduce the wife and husband team of the atmospheric restaurants Cafe China, China Blue, and Birds of a Feather. They are purposefully designing a whole other Chinese dining experience. Welcome to the show, Yiming Wang and Xian Zhang.
Thank you, Linda.
Thank you, Linda. It's great
to be here. It's nice to be here.
Yeah. So Yiming and Xian opened their first restaurant, Cafe China, back in 2011. Having no restaurant experience, they were guided only by their vision of a respectable Chinese restaurant where they themselves would enjoy eating. The restaurant was a success and quickly earned 2 stars from the New York Times and a Michelin star. China Blue, their second restaurant, opened in Tribeca in 2013. Taking on a different Chinese regional cuisine, China Blue focuses on the food from Shanghai and the surrounding region. It has gained a following amongst both locals and Chinese nationals, and it's become well known as much for its food as for its beautifully designed space. And most recently, the dynamic duo opened Birds of a Feather in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, where the cuisine is Sichuanese, but with new ideas and new dishes. And Yiming actually designed all of the interiors of all 3 spaces herself. So Yiming, we'll start with you. Could you tell us about the concept of your restaurants?
Absolutely, Linda. Thank you. We started Cafe China in year 2011. Hoping to bring in our own perspective of Chinese food to the city. The market back then was very different, and it was dominated by American Chinese food, mostly run by older immigrants. Just like any other New Yorkers, I like to experience the city through dining out. But Chinese restaurant at the time had never completely satisfied me. Chinese food is delicious by its own, but dining out is a completely different story. I think you know what I mean.
Yeah, for sure.
And I found myself constantly bothered by those little details. You know, in our modern lives, our time is very precious, and the life is very hectic. So since we only have so little time to spend with people we care about, that time is better spent with a memorable experience, right?
Mm-hmm.
They say you need to be the change you want to see. So we started, and we started very small. Looking back, I really appreciate the scale we decided. Because being small gave us, I think it really gave us time to learn and to catch up with the intricacies of running business. Neither Zane or myself know anything about running a restaurant, and we never worked in a restaurant before. So the beginning was very difficult. But being small also gave us more, especially me, the control freak, mm-hmm. more control.
The interior designer.
Yes. So it does give me more control over an intimate experience. Without that skill, I wouldn't be able to like handmade all the menus. Mm-hmm. And even like bringing my favorite dining wire and lightings from home. Mm-hmm. Because especially back the time, the restaurant supplies were very generic and boring. So I know those beautiful items break over the time, but that's what beautiful things were, right? And you know, I'm just happy to be able to share those beautiful things.
Yeah, let's talk about that just a little bit. So did you have a design background before you started these projects, or was it kind of out of your personal aesthetic?
I had no design training at all.
Wow, this is so impressive, because I think when you step into these restaurants, they completely feel like the era that you've chosen. And so, like, let's talk about Cafe China, China Blue, where the 1930s Shanghai influence is really big. How did you settle on that?
Sure. Yeah, I think I'm a very visual person, and I consider myself a good designer for the restaurants because I'm crystal clear about the look and feel of the space. And the look I'm aiming for is one that with soft edges, warm and storied. I want it to convey a particular mood. So it's not meant to be perfect in a traditional restaurant sense.
To that point, I think it almost feels like lived in.
Very much so. I think the space should be a stage for the people in it and should facilitate the food. So the space itself is not the centerpiece. I think, you know, the food, the space, and the service should all serve one and only one purpose, which is a unique Chinese dining experience.
So, I mean, that's really beautiful, kind of the experience you're bringing your diners. Do you feel like, you know, how does the overall experience and the atmosphere contribute to your mission with your restaurants? Do you think it, like you mentioned earlier, you know, when you're in such a kind of calm and elevated setting, you know, you allow the food to also be like more of a center stage focus of the experience. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. When I first came up with, you know, the idea of 1930s, and also the name of Cafe China, because The Chinese name was actually taken from a book title by Eileen Chang, my favorite author from the 30s. I was deeply influenced and inspired by her. So in a way, I designed the space of Cafe China and China Blue I feel I was guided by her vivid description of the 30s. And I think that was one of the most interesting time of China, because that's when Chinese culture and Western culture first influenced each other.
Oh, that's really great. It's a momentous era then. And it sounds like you had this vision before you even knew you wanted to open a restaurant.
I do see restaurant as a container of my fantasies.
Okay. That's super cool. So let's also switch now to the food that you guys serve. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious to hear, you know, how did you guys settle on the menu that you have at your restaurants, and also like a focus specifically on Shanghai food with China Blue, and then Sichuanese food for maybe more Cafe China Birds of a Feather?
Yeah. When we opened Cafe China, we had actually thought about having Shanghainese food. At the time, we thought that will work better with what she had in mind. But luckily, you have it. You know, it's we end up meeting a chef who turns out to be a Chinese chef, and we really like him. So that's how we say, okay, well, what the heck, can we just do Chinese?
Yeah.
But I mean, we both of us really love Chinese food even before we opened a Chinese restaurant. So it's something that that we feel comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
And when we opened the China Blue, we said, well, we got this Chinese restaurant, you know, on our belt. So
yep.
Let's now do a proper Shanghainese food. Because at the time, 3 years after we opened Cafe China, Sichuanese food started to kind of catch on.
Mm-hmm.
So there's quite a few Chinese restaurants around Cafe China, I mean, also around town. But the traditional Shanghainese foods had kind of been left on the wayside.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm Shanghainese, so I feel a little bit indignified. So we said, well, you know, since we're opening a second restaurant and the decor is still going to be influenced by 1930s Shanghai, why don't we, you know, try to do that?
Mm-hmm.
And so we spent a lot of time searching for a good chef. And, you know, it's quite a difficult, you know, process because at a time, a lot of the old, you know, chefs that really do traditional Shanghainese well are retiring.
Mm-hmm.
or leaving the country. So,
like the classically trained Chinese chefs, they're getting older.
They're getting older, and a lot of new people, they don't want to do Shanghainese because even in Shanghai at the time when we went back, we found that you know that particular cuisine is not popular. It's not, I mean, even in Shanghai itself, Chinese cuisine was becoming more and more popular. Western food is more and more popular. Fast food is very, very popular.
Oh, how interesting. But
Shanghainese food, nobody really talk about it too much anymore, which is kind of sad. So we said, well, you know, so we end up hiring somebody. But it's kind of interesting, you know, because our first chef was actually from Taiwan. But the Taiwanese, they have chefs that's originally from mainland China. And they left with the defeat of the Kuomintang, and they mm-hmm. went to Taiwan, and they preserved some traditional Chinese cooking. You know, so we end up hiring a chef who has that tradition, and you know, it was quite interesting to see the difference between what, you know, what Taiwanese version of Shanghainese food is versus the mainland version of the Shanghainese food.
Oh,
yeah.
So your chef is from Taiwan by way of mainland China.
The first chef was.
Yeah.
Currently we have a chef who is actually from mainland China, and so his style is closer to the mainland version of
the one that you grew up with.
Yeah, exactly.
So could you describe like the characteristics of Shanghainese cuisine?
Well, Chinese cuisine, when we think about Chinese cuisine, it's You know, there are two schools. There's the indigenous Shanghainese food, which is typically a lot of it's actually, you know, very saucy, like the red cooked pork, or the dumpur pork has a lot of soy sauce, very red in coloring, a lot of glaze, or the very unsauced version, very clear, like there's a crystal shrimp. There's a lot of vegetables, a lot of fish, so that's very clear. They don't put much aside from salt into the food. And there's the other side of it. It's really a fusion food because Shanghai was a big town. I mean, big trading town back in the 30s. Okay. So you had a lot of people bringing like pork chops. You guys have things that were not normally considered to be Shanghai Chinese. So there's two schools. But nowadays, when people talk about Shanghainese food, they're referring to Chuanyangcai, which means the area around Shanghai, like Zhejiang, Jiangsu, that area. Some of these food are very different from Shanghainese food, but they all share the same trait in the sense that they are highly focused on the quality of the food, the quality of the ingredients, and seasonality.
Mm-hmm. So that's something you guys try to bring to particularly China Blue.
Yes, that's right.
That's really cool. And do you feel like what you have here in the city is pretty authentic in taste to what you can find in China, or you're bringing some of your own personal twists or New York modern spins on the dishes?
Well, you try to stay as authentic as possible because you have to start somewhere, and we have quite a long, like a couple thousand years of culinary tradition. So we thought that that's a good starting point. But every chef has his own interpretation of what classic is. So you get different style, different execution of the same dish every time you get a new chef. But I think overall, it's something that I think, it's like Yiming was alluding to, as a whole package. It's about the food, it's about the restaurant, the space, it's about the service. So for us, we try to give the whole package. And Yiming, she is, like she said, she's a control freak. She, I mean, I'm
it
not
works
much,
out really well for
yes.
the diners, though.
Yeah, I'm not as much of a control freak as she is, probably. But I also, over time, developed kind of an eagle eye. We're very picky eaters. When we go to restaurants, we tend to play the critic role. But we are our own biggest critic because we eat in our own restaurants every day. We probably spend more time than anybody that we know in our own restaurants. And we even send friends to our restaurant to be anonymous diners. So we really care about what people experience.
That's awesome. That dedication is so kind of authentic and 100%.
Thanks.
So how did you guys then decide on going back to a more Sichuanese flavor for Williamsburg? And also, from what I can tell, like simplifying the aesthetic there for that neighborhood.
You want to take this one, or I can do this?
I mean, space-wise, I want to play something different because, we already used the 1930s concept for two restaurants. I think that's enough, so we'll take a break from there.
Yeah.
But the vibe and the space and the overall feeling, I wanted to be centered around, Brooklyn, but Williamsburg in particular. I wanted to reflect the spirit of the streets in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. So I decided on a modern approach.
For me, the concept for Birds of Feather is that of a reimagining of, you know, the dining experience. That, you know, the restaurant just, you know, we want something that's new, we want something that's interesting, and we want something that just happens to be a Chinese restaurant, not the other way around. So we did, I think we did start designing a restaurant, and then we say, okay, you know, the food aspect of it, we like Chinese food because it has the energy to be to parallel, you know, the youthful energy of Williamsburg.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that is something that is probably more appropriate for the neighborhood, and I think, you know, I think it works out well. But for me, it's something that, you know, we want to see if it's people can appreciate, you know, the Chinese food just like they would appreciate any restaurant. It's not just about ethnic, you know, food. It's about whether it's, if you can take that food and make your own.
Right. It's just about going to a good restaurant.
Exactly.
That's really cool. So we'll talk more on that right after the break.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Today's program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market. From papayas and samosas to reishi mushrooms, if it's something that sounds delicious, chances are you'll find the freshest, best version of it at Whole Foods Market. They have more than 400 stores across the country, so if you consider pizza its own food group or just can't imagine when avocado toast wasn't a thing, Whole Foods Market has you covered. Visit wholefoodsmarket.com to find a store near you. Whole Foods Market, whatever makes you whole.
Welcome back. You're listening to Feast Meets West. We just left off talking about how with Birds of a Feather, you want to create just a great dining experience. The Chinese food aspect of it, just like it just happens to be Chinese food. And so what do you think of the reception so far?
Well, it's been great. What's funny is that we actually met a lot of diners from Cafe China and China Blue here in Williamsburg. A lot of people came up to me, oh, you know, yeah, we work where China Blue or Cafe China is, and we live nearby. So now we have your food all day long.
Oh, that's great. You're building your own community.
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, sign up. I think the reception is really great. I like a lot of people coming and they know exactly what we serve. And didn't know exactly what to order. I think, you know, part of what we had envisioned to make the food part of the community is actually realizing. So we are really happy about that.
Yeah. And one thing I've also noticed, I think, you know, China Blue is such a beautiful and also large space in Tribeca that I feel like I've seen like Chinese celebrities host parties there or something like that. Is this true? It kind of has its own place with like the Chinese community right now.
Yes, it is becoming the place, especially for a lot of fashion designers like Alexander Wang and Philip Lim and a few others. They are regulars and they even host their parties there.
Yeah, that's super cool.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of celebrities live in Tribeca. You know, we try to stay discreet about it because I've seen, you know, what's the name of the guy who was the sniper movie?
Mark Wahlberg?
Okay, there's so many of those.
Anyway, yeah.
Yeah, you know, a lot of our neighbors are fairly well known, so I've seen them coming all disheveled and just came out, got out of bed, and they want some food. I was like, okay, fine. But, you know, I never asked them for autographs, so don't come to me for it.
Both Meryl Streep and Leonardo DiCaprio were there.
Oh, that's so fun.
Yeah.
But it kind of sounds like they're just, neighborhood regulars. They're seeking out like you mentioned, a positive dining experience because they just want to have a nice dinner out. Mm-hmm. And they're not, do you feel like they're going to your restaurants because, yes, they want great Chinese food, or they just want, you know, a good dining experience?
I think everyone needs a space, a place where they feel comfortable with. And we are trying to be that place. So we open 365 days with no break.
Oh, what?
We want to be reliable and trustworthy.
Yeah. We actually, once we had that snowstorm from 2 years ago, and we end up, on that day, we actually had a huge wedding, and the whole city was shut down, but they had a wedding anyways.
Yeah, I think I saw that on your Instagram.
Yeah, it was so amazing, because like,
it's a magical moment.
We're probably, yeah, exactly. They were probably the only wedding in town at that moment. And we ended up putting the whole staff in the hotels because they couldn't get home.
It was a beautiful wedding.
Yeah.
That's so cool. I think that also, again, speaks to your hardworking nature. Eating there all the time, open on snowstorms. Yeah. Sounds like nothing will get to you guys. And as a wife and husband team, how do you guys split up your roles?
Well, she does the design. She does the concept. I kind of try to manage it, operations and fix things that breaks.
I'm in charge of the look and feel, just like at home.
Yeah, and then also I'm curious about that, balance between then like work and life. You know, do you find that like the work then like seeps into...
It's a struggle.
Like if we walk into your home in Brooklyn, is it, you know, what is it like? Is it more like birds of a feather, or is it more like Cafe China?
It is more like China Blue, but in an even bigger scale and level.
Wow.
It's gorgeous. She really did a good job.
That's amazing. Okay, so kind of to that design point, Yiming, what advice could you give someone who wants to emulate these very beautiful immersive spaces, either for their businesses or for their homes? What's like an approach they could take to even start?
I think you want to stay true to yourself and bring in all those beautiful things you want to have in your life to be closer to you. I feel I'm very lucky because I was surrounded by quite a few very genuine person. So I was influenced by that. And I think, if you are looking for something beautiful, you will get it.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned for the first restaurant, you even brought some of your own objects into the home. So is that correct?
That's correct. So sometimes Jin would find all of a sudden a lighting is missing from the ceiling. So instead, there's a big hole there.
Yeah, like, what happened to it? Oh, it's in the restaurant now.
He's getting used to that now.
Right.
And where do you like look for your objects? Is it from, flea markets in and around the city, or do you source from China?
I used to go to flea markets a lot, but not too often anymore, because I'm getting very particular and very picky. But on the other end, I get to know a lot of a good resource for, what I do. So I travel around the country a lot. I often go out of town, and I know where to find my stuff. I also, sometimes even find myself from my trip to Europe. But actually, to a lot of customers' surprise, only a very small percentage of my findings are from China.
Mm-hmm.
I think for Chinese elements tend to be very strong and very overpowering. So I use them very carefully because otherwise I'll be just another Chinese restaurant.
Yeah, like too kitschy or something like that with the red lanterns or the lotus symbolism and all of that.
Yeah, because I think the food is the focal point. And if the food is already authentic Chinese, that speaks a lot. And that should be enough element for the Chinese-ness.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to downplay my interiors because I want, a good mix. As I mentioned, 1930s Shanghai, I think it is about, the Chinese culture and Western culture influence each other. It's not just all about Chinese.
Mm-hmm. So I totally feel this. Like one of the, misconceptions about Chinese food is that it has to be in a setting that looks entirely Chinese. And you guys are correcting that. No, it doesn't have to be.
Right.
And it can be in a just a, tasteful environment where there's accents that speak to its culture. But, you don't have to be like sitting in a flashy red room.
Right, exactly. And I think one of the things that that also we want to dispel is that, now that people are starting to familiarize themselves with Chinese regional cuisine, I think eventually, hopefully they'll discover that, Sichuanese food is not all about hot. There's, very intricate layering of spices, which is they do very well. I have friends in Chengdu who's a master Sichuanese chef, and you will not be able to tell that his cooking is Chinese if you just think that it's going to be very hot.
Mm-hmm. What are some examples of those dishes that break the mold of the traditional, 60s Sichuanese American idea?
A lot of seafood, a lot of appetizers, tend to be lightly flavored and not too overpowering with chili pepper. Chili pepper is actually an import instead of an original. The original Chinese spice was actually Chinese peppercorn. So they use that a little bit, but they didn't use a lot of chili pepper on top of it. So you will see the variation in spice. There's more than 24 different flavor profiles that the chef will tell you, and only a few of them had to do with chili peppers. In the same vein, Shanghainese food is not all about sweet. People tend to say, "Oh, Chinese food is so sweet," but it's actually there's a variation. Certain region or certain item tend to be sweeter, while others tend to be more savory or more true to original. But they don't use chili pepper at all, so you will not find that in the menu. But mostly there's a spectrum of different flavor profiles.
Very cool. I think the spectrum aspect is the key there, and showing the subtleties of each cuisine.
Right.
So I know there's a ton of different dishes on your menus, but I'm curious to hear what are some of your favorite dishes right now that you're enjoying.
Oh, we're different. She likes certain things. I like something else.
Yeah, I want to hear.
Right, why don't you go first?
I sometimes like to pair tea smoked duck with sake, the bubbling sake at Birds of Feather. I feel, the sensation it has a very unique balance and texture, and by having the two creates a different sensation.
Very cool. Yiming, you're such a designer. Even your choice of beverage and food pairing sounds like designed.
We actually did a whole series of videos for a Chinese TV station on food pairings at Cafe China a couple of years ago. So yeah, this is something that we've been thinking about.
Okay, I'm gonna have to ask you guys for the link for that later.
Okay,
I'll post it on
sure.
the site.
Yeah.
What about you?
So Chinese food, I like things that's a little bit bold, a lot of different flavoring. I like the braised fish. There's a, you know, at Cafe China, there are two different versions of the braised fish. One with the red sauce, which is a lot of chili peppers, and one with the white sauce. It was a white soup, basically, that has, no chili peppers, very little chili peppers. I actually like the white soup because it brings out more, subtlety in the flavors, mm-hmm. the layers of flavors. That one I'm very much just thinking about it, making me hungry. and I like the spicy beef tendon. It's something that people don't, only if you're adventurous, you'll be like, oh, I love tendon.
Like, but people don't order it enough.
They don't order a lot. I love because it has a lot of texture, while at the same time there is kind of an oiliness to it that really is, feels great in your mouth. And with the flavor on top, it doesn't taste bland. There's a lot of layers to it. So it's a great way to start your meal. It's an appetizer. For Shanghainese, I'll go with the fish fillets in wine sauce. That's a particular cooking style that is unique to... Oh, actually, it's unique to the East Coast of China. Different regions had their own take on it. So my hometown version has... they used Chinese wine lees, which is basically the stuff that you left when you make rice wine, like sake. You can use that, and when you use that in your cooking, and it imbues a kind of like a alcoholic, but like alcoholic fermented flavor to the fish, which is it's not. I mean, some people find it weird, but for me, I grew up with that stuff. But I think it's also very. How I say this, it's very otherworldly, or it's very mm-hmm. unique.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like something I'm, familiar with seeing on typical Chinese menus here.
Yeah, so I mean, I think I actually use it on a lot of proteins, like seafood, like fish or shrimp or crabs. But that is something that is really unique, and I grew up, eating stuff. I really love it.
Yeah, great recommendations, guys, and totally like out of the ordinary, I would say.
And to add to that, I enjoyed all different intestines. they have different nutrition values, but also in today's environment, think about it, it's actually very sustainable and very eco-friendly.
Right.
Because you kill less animals, right?
Yeah, you want to do the whole, what is it? The head to tail dining,
nose to tail.
Exactly. Nose to tail dining experience. Okay, so you guys have three restaurants under your belt now. Mm-hmm. What's next? What's on the horizon? And what are some projects brewing?
We've been fighting about this, by the way.
For me, it is to take the experience outside of the restaurants. It is very challenging because things can easily go out of control. But just think about this. Actually, I think all social experiences, all social gatherings can be fun with food. All social gatherings can be enhanced if the food is good.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, it's very important part of the life. So if we can implement on that and take it into something interesting, it'll be big.
Do you have an example of this? Or like, what is your vision?
It is more the catering direction. But, I'm looking for ways mm-hmm. to you know, keep it a little bit under control.
Under control. Yep.
Yeah.
Well, for me, we go out sometimes, different restaurants, when we travel to different countries, we look at, sometimes we get these ideas, and some of the things that, that I've been thinking about are things like hot pots, which has not had any success attracting a Western audience. It's still mostly, Chinese audience. And I've been asking questions about, how that can be changed.
Yeah, and I would jump in here and also recommend Tang Hot Pot.
Oh, yeah, we ate there.
You were there. It was great.
A couple of weeks ago. Yeah,
that kind of thing is different. It's elevating the Chinese experience for all
Absolutely.
Diners.
Right. I also checked out that episode.
Okay.
With you and Yu Li.
Yeah. So that's something that I've been thinking about, and other things like fine dining. Fine dining is a very difficult act to pull off because of both economic and cultural reasons. So we've been kind of thinking about how it could be done, So that's one thing that we talk about, and also the hot pot. Hot pot is, again, a cultural thing. It's not only about, it's not only about the food. We had, different takes on why it's not really attractive to a wider audience, but in China it's super popular. So it's something that, I've been thinking about. So maybe down the road we will open something, to test that theory out.
Very cool. Well, I'm really looking forward to this, and I can tell, with your, hard work and your diligence and also good taste, and not just food, but also design, I can see these additional projects totally taking off. And so that just about wraps up today's show. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Linda.
Thank you, Linda.
So what's the best way for our listeners to stay up to date on news from all of your projects?
That's a good question. We have Twitter, we have Facebook. You go online when we have something that's a little bit more tangible, we will put it on the radar so people can see it.
He normally lets the product to speak for itself.
So there's your take on social media too. Awesome. Well, for you listeners out there, did you enjoy this episode? If yes, please tell your friends. And please leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be back next week with another awesome conversation from the world of Asian food.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.